Next on BYUSN, which BYU football position coach will play the most vital role for BYU football's success this season? And speaking of position coaches, I go one-on-one with offensive line coach TJ Woods, and he tells us where the O-line has improved the most since he took over.
Wide receiver coach Fessy Satake will break down the depth at the wide receiver position and discuss the growth of the offense overall. And Top 5 Tuesday features the top 5 plays from fall camp in just the first couple of weeks.
Let's do this! Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. I am Spencer Linton, alongside a man who can appreciate some good pit bull, frankly. He is Jason Shepherd.
Pit bull, naming rights to a stadium in Florida. Is it FIU, right?
It's FIU.
Okay, this is going to sound like I'm taking a big shot at him. I didn't realize things were still going that well for Pitbull.
No, listen, he's a worldwide star, Jason.
He is Mr. Worldwide.
Trying to name a stadium after himself.
So I just saw this. Apparently, like, his official name, you know how, like, we have the official credit union of BYU, you know, all those things?
Oh, yeah.
He's the official entrepreneur of FIU.
How does that even work?
I don't know.
How do you become an official entrepreneur?
Well, you pay money, apparently. And then you dictate the terms.
Individual university. It's good to be Pitbull, apparently.
I guess.
Holy cow. It brings up a bigger conversation, which we will attack later as it pertains to BYU. So mull that over. We're off to a great start.
Kind of makes me wish BYU played FIU this year.
All rise and shout. Let's get to what's trending.
I like the progress. I like where we started. I think we're way ahead of where we were last year this time.
All those things come together. BYU can compete in the top 4 or 5 of this conference.
That's a giant step. And that giant step, I think, will show itself on the field.
Let's talk about BYU football a little bit more, shall we? And specifically, as we look at position coaches and the impact that those coaches could have on this BYU football team in 2024, when frankly, BYU needs an upgrade at just about every position. So my question today to kick off the conversation, Jason, is which BYU position coach, not a coordinator, obviously not Kalani Sitake, the head coach, but a position coach specifically, will play the most vital role for BYU in 2024?
This one was super easy for me, and all we have to do is look back to last year. What was the position that we seemed to talk about more than any other position? And that was the offensive line. Mm. So for me, that's exactly where I go, and I have extremely high hopes for TJ Woods. And it's not just because of his track record, it's hearing the players talk about what the offensive line is doing different this year and how much it has excited them with the changes that they're seeing, and they see the production getting better. The talent was always there. I think it was just a matter of, are we utilizing the talent in the right direction? And I think that now we're starting to get back to that. And so for me, I think he plays the most vital role, because when you look at the offense, it's not just that position. It basically dictates so many other positions, almost everything else for the offense in general. It obviously protects the quarterback. It is your running game. It's, can you open up the holes big enough for the runners to be able to attack?
But Jason, wasn't the running game great last year?
The running game was not great last year. So to me, that solidifying the offensive line can open up so many different avenues for this offense that we just didn't see last year, because the play on the offensive line, and they've said it themselves, was not up to par with what we're used to seeing. And I love the hire of TJ Woods. I love what he's brought in, and the guys are buying in, and that gets me even more excited.
Listen, we're talking about an offensive line that had a rush efficiency that was ranked 129th in the country. If you're not familiar with Division I FBS college football, I think there are 133 college football teams that are in that FBS category, Jason. BYU is one of the worst rushing efficient teams in the entire country. So yes, I understand why you obviously look to the offensive line. And talking with Blaine Fowler just a few days ago, he pointed out, upon film review, it wasn't that the offensive line didn't have effort.
Right.
And they didn't have the talent and the capability and the size. Just blatant missed assignments. A misunderstanding of where they're supposed to be and when they're supposed to be there. And that, my friend, goes in line with your argument, which is coaching.
Yeah.
You bring coaching in and you have guys that are disciplined and assignment sound that already have the size and the ability and the talent within them, then you can start to see a drastic improvement. So I understand why you automatically go to TJ Woods, and I'm with you. I'm super excited to see how that happens. Unfortunately, on the other side of the ball and in the trenches, BYU's pass rush at the defensive line was also really porous. I mean, look at the offensive line numbers here, and then we're going to show you the defensive line numbers. BYU averaged a hair over 104 rushing yards a game. The Cougars want to be at about 150.
Right.
To feel like they're going to win, you know, 7 or 8 games. 19 sacks allowed. That's not a huge number per se, but it felt like the quarterback was under duress a lot last year, getting a lot of missed assignments. You look at the defensive line, however, and they, if your offensive line and your offense aren't performing well, to try and create some balance, you need the defense to create chaos. And BYU just didn't. They didn't get to the quarterback for a second consecutive year. And I know it was Jay Hill's first year. This is why we feel like he's going to cook this year. So I'm, but specifically, he's looking to Sione Puha and Kelly Papinga on the defensive line. So I feel like those guys that can get Tyler Batty and Isaiah Banya to go to another level, and then the tackles on the inside, Blake Mangelson and John Nightmare Nelson, can those guys take a significant step forward under Sione Puha in the middle of the defensive line, all within the congregation of the Jay Hill defense, because they need it? I know that the linebackers are going to be good. We feel like the secondary is going to be really good. That's where Jay Hill specializes. But I'm looking at what Sione Puha and Kelly Papinga can do in year two,
yeah,
to try and get some chaos or a chaotic plays going behind the opponent's offensive line. Can they just create some turnovers and be disruptive? It hasn't been nearly enough over the past few seasons. That needs to happen if BYU is going to create turnovers and win football games.
Yeah, and the word you used, I think, is spot on, and it's disruptive. And we think so many times that when we talk about pressure, pressure has to equate to sacks. And it doesn't always have to. Certainly, you'll take as many sacks as you can possibly get from pressure up front. But disruption is really the name of the game, because that can be forcing the quarterback out of the pocket. And depending on the quarterback, maybe that's not one of his strong suits and you can force a mistake. It also is closing up those gaps on the offensive line to not give the running back a lane to be able to run. It's just making the opposing offense have to adjust because you've taken away options.
Yeah.
And we didn't see that enough last year on the defensive front.
I know that in football, it's the ultimate team sport because everything correlates.
Yeah.
Everything is tied to each other. If the offensive line is not good, then guess what? Your quarterback and running backs are not going to be as good. And your wide receivers aren't going to be as good because they're not going to be getting the ball as much. And on the defensive side, if you're not getting to the quarterback and creating disruption, you're not going to create as many turnovers and thus give your offense opportunities to capitalize on said turnovers. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It's also very, very complex. But interesting that both of us chose both sides of the trenches as the position coaches that will play the most vital role. The game is largely won.
It's
there.
It's won at the line. And it's both sides.
It's the initial domino.
It is. It's what starts everything. And it's what gives one team the initial advantage. Whoever gets that push, the other team's immediately on their heels. And then everything else can fall into place.
Yes. Looking at basically every major college football defensive metric, BYU was bottom 10 or bottom 20 in all of the most important categories: sacks, tackles for loss, those disruptive plays, turnovers forced. It just didn't happen enough. Jay Hill knows it. They've spent a ton of time working on it. Watch what Sione Puha and Kelly Papinga can do with the upperclassmen heavy defensive line. That's where your leaders are, Jason. You had one Big 12 all-conference preseason player, and it was Tyler Batty, and he's on the defensive line. What can those guys do? I cannot wait to see what happens this season. The season is unique because I have no idea what's going to happen, and I love it.
All right, let's stick with preseason conversations. Yesterday, the preseason coaches poll was released, and five Big 12 teams were included in those rankings.
Okay, that's a good number.
The highest team was number 13, Utah. Number 17 was Kansas State. Number 18 was Oklahoma State. Number 21, Arizona. And number 24, Kansas.
We live in a world where Kansas is a preseason top 25 team, folks.
And guess what? Of course, BYU happens to play all five of them naturally this season. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So which of those preseason ranked teams is BYU most likely to upset?
I'm looking mid-October.
Because BYU will not be a favorite in any of those games.
Well, yeah, preseason, you're right. They wouldn't be. Like, when those preseason lines are released, they will not be a favorite in any of them.
By the time it gets there, we'll have to see, obviously.
Yes.
But right now. So which do you think is the likely upset if BYU is going to upset any of the five?
Oh, there is a juicy matchup after a bye against Arizona. Some of you thought I was going to say Utah because it's after a bye. Arizona at home after a bye mid-October. And the Cougars, for whatever reason, have enjoyed great success against Arizona. Every year is so different. Yeah. I know that what has happened in the past has nothing to do with what is necessarily going to happen on the field this year. But there is something to this mental edge of we're pretty good against Arizona, and BYU's good against Arizona, and frankly, against teams in October on their home field. So I have circled 21st ranked Arizona to put them on upset alert against BYU off a bye in Lavelle Edwards Stadium, when I believe that BYU will be playing with some urgency, because that's one of those games that BYU knows if they win, it's a gettable game against a good team, but a gettable game on your home field that would allow BYU to get that much closer to bowl eligibility. It's one of those turning point games.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's urgency there, and I love the extra preparation when you're talking about Noah Fifita, one of the best passing quarterbacks in college football. Give Jay Hill 2 weeks to review the film, get his secondary, which we believe is going to be really good, ready against the Wildcats. And I like BYU's chances. It also helps that BYU's 4-2 against Arizona, basically in the last 20 years, since 2006. They're 4-1 in the last five. Kalani Sitake has enjoyed great success. Yeah. Has he lost to Arizona?
He has not.
No, he has not. 2016, 2018, 2021. Has not lost to Arizona. But he has never played them at home.
Which is interesting.
Enough.
Neutral site and down in Arizona.
Neutral site twice, because they played at the Cardinal Stadium in 16 in Kalani's debut. Then in Vegas, as you said, and a true road game in Tucson. BYU gets them at home. Kalani hasn't lost to them. That's my game. What about you?
Yeah, I can certainly understand Arizona. And if I'm picking an actual team, which people say, well, isn't that the point of this conversation? I probably would have gone Arizona. This may surprise some people. I'm actually going to go with Kansas State.
And as
crazy as this sounds, this has less to do about Kansas State. I love Kansas State. I think Kansas State has a legit chance to win this conference. I think they're fantastic.
They have a dark horse Heisman candidate at quarterback.
So honestly, this is not anything negative about K-State. This is less about the team and more about the circumstances around the game.
Timing?
It's timing. Look, this will be not BYU's first home game, but this will be BYU's first conference home game of the season.
Yep.
They will have come off the road in the previous two games. It's the two previous non-conference games at SMU and then at Wyoming.
Hopefully they're rolling off a win in Laramie.
Exactly. And BYU traditionally, in those types of games, especially early in the season, does very, very well. In fact, since 2021, BYU is 4-0 at home against P5 teams in the month of September.
Okay.
It's also, not that these players have any connection to that 96 team, but that's also the game where there's going to be all the alumni from the 96 team there.
The wideout, the drop shadow uniforms.
The drop shadow uniforms. So there's going to be this big celebration of the Cotton Bowl victory over K-State. So To me, it's about that scenario playing out. BYU in scenarios like this in the past have typically done very, very well. Again, I love K-State. I think they're very, very good. But it's more the circumstances of the game than it is the actual opponent as to why I say that.
In the Kalani Sitake era, your stat that you just gave to all of BYU Sports Nation carries some real weight. 4-0 at home in September.
Yeah.
Against Power 5 teams. And not just ho-hum, right?
Yeah.
BYU's got some good wins, including the game against Baylor.
Yeah.
And Utah.
Yeah.
And Arizona State.
Yeah.
Those are some quality wins. I know Arizona State's not great now, but they were pretty good in 2021 when they had the eventual Heisman Trophy winner
right at
quarterback who transferred to LSU. But this is – that carries some weight. So,
there are opportunities
not entirely,
here.
I mean, it's surprising when I hear it at first because
yes.
Kansas State's like one of the favorites to win the
conference. Exactly. And they very well could.
But the timing of the game
it's
is
the
very
timing and the circumstances around the game
sure.
that I think is – it's what we've seen BYU be able to rise to the occasion
yes.
in games like that.
Okay, I'm going to give you one word for the remaining three games we did not discuss
okay.
that will make you think that maybe BYU could pull this off. Okay? Well, or two words. Oklahoma State, Friday night game
yep.
in Provo. Hey, that's tough to walk into for Oklahoma State. At Utah, rivalry. Have we not learned
yep.
to expect the unexpected in that game? Rivalry. At Kansas in Provo, injuries. Kansas has been beleaguered by injuries. That game's in November.
Yep.
It's in November. Injuries is the word that comes to mind. BYU's got a chance in all of these games. They have a chance in all of these games. At Utah is clearly the toughest. No question, right?
That's why I think the non-conference, coming out of non-conference, being 3-0, and then having some of these opportunities here, it's going to go – the non-conference really is going to set up how
sure.
this season
sure.
progresses for BYU.
Just get BYU to 3-1 through four games. I don't care how they do it, Jason. If they're 3-1 through four, they got a real shot
yes.
to take a significant step forward. Our question of the day, you heard our arguments? Which of the five Big 12 teams in the preseason coaches top 25 poll does BYU have the best chance to upset? At Mo Knows BYU on X. Nice handle. Kansas State early or Kansas late? It's early enough in the year that BYU should be fully healthy for K-State. That's another factor for
mm-hmm.
sure. Play in front of a raucous Lavelle Edwards Stadium night crowd. Is that game a night game?
I don't know if we have
we're
a time
hoping,
on that
right?
yet. Yeah, I think
we're
we assume it would be.
At night, we're
yeah.
hoping it's the night game
yes.
thing.
Yes.
Okay. Then they continue. If Kansas is underachieving in November or BYU is overachieving, that game could easily see BYU favored when it's played. Will Kansas be healthy? Frankly, will
BYU be healthy?
Jalen Daniels, their quarterback, be healthy?
Right.
He's kind of the guy that's going to make everything go for the Jayhawks. Great stuff. Hashtag BYUS on an X, Facebook, and Instagram to join the conversation. You pick the upset of the five preseason ranked teams for BYU.
After Further Review is back tonight with the schedule show as Dave Blaine and David roll through the fall schedule game by game. That's tonight at 7 Eastern on the BYU TV app.
After the break, I go one-on-one with TJ Woods, Jason's pick for the most vital position coach going into 2024. Where does he feel the offensive line has improved the most since he took over? This is BYUSN.
A lot better. Coach Woods is grinding, and I think we have depth at that position.
We're going to do what we do. To have those guys back, I think, is a huge, huge bonus for us and a great place to start.
We are live at Studio B. This is your day-to-day BYU Sports play-by-play. I'm Spencer Linton alongside Pitbull fan Jason Shepard. Had to do it for the second time.
I'm Mr. Local. He's Mr. Worldwide. I'm Mr. Local.
Are you BYU's sole entrepreneur representative?
I am the official entrepreneur of this show today.
Great stuff. Also great, an opportunity I had to speak with TJ Woods, BYU's new offensive line coach, following practice yesterday. Five practices in. And asking him things like, from the day you took over to where you are in fall camp right now, where has the offensive line taken the biggest step forward? And if he had to move one of those guys out to a pass-catching role, who'd he give the nod to? That and more, my one-on-one with TJ Woods. Coach TJ Woods on BYU Sports Nation once again. And, Coach, I think every BYU fan across the board, if they have any sense of what happened last year with the offensive line, one is very excited to have some new energy in the room, but they all want to know
how you feel the offensive line is progressing from where you picked them up from day one to where we are in fall camp now.
Well, I think they've made a ton of progress for sure. You know, they put in a lot of work, and you know, the standard has been set pretty high for those guys, and they've answered the bell every single day. And I'm really proud of where they're at now. Obviously, we have a long way to go. That's why we're out here practicing right now. Thank goodness it's only practice five. But I'm pleased with where the group is for sure.
Where specifically have you seen them take the biggest steps forward, scheme and just from your perspective of general assignments and being disciplined?
Well, I think their overall knowledge of the offense has improved. I think a lot of that, to be honest, has to do with experience, right? There, a lot of those guys have played a lot of snaps and have been in this offense for quite some time. So, you know, I think that's part of it. And then, you know, in my opinion, we have as good a leadership as I've ever been a part of in that room. And, you know, summer's kind of the time for those guys to take it by the reins and, right, the coaches get a little bit of a break. And while we're here sometimes, we're not here quite as often as we are throughout the fall and spring and et cetera. So guys like Connor Pay, Braden Keim, Caleb Etienne, those guys have really taken ownership in not only understanding what we're doing for them, but helping the others learn, right? And in my opinion, the best way to learn something is to teach it. If you can teach it, you know it. So they've done a tremendous job that way.
A couple of names you mentioned specifically, Connor Pay first and foremost. He's never afraid to share his opinion. And he has said last year he didn't feel like he could quite hold his teammates accountable. That's different this year. So how are you seeing him hold his teammates accountable this go around?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, the hardest part about being a leader is you know, feeling like you're on an island at times, or you know, you need the other guys in the room to help you be a leader too. And I think that's kind of what we've tried to approach is it's a group effort, right? It's not all on my shoulders. It's not all on Connor's shoulders. We all hold each other accountable. We coach and treat each player differently, but we hold each other to the same standard, and that standard's really high.
The other one is Caleb Etienne, and just from having some conversations with members of the offensive line and other football players, they've specifically pointed him out as, in their words, a different player than he was last year. What's different about Caleb as he approaches his next season?
I think confidence. I think he has confidence. I think he's playing aggressive. You know, I think it's natural, it's human nature for an offensive lineman not to let anybody down, right? If we don't do our job, no one else on the field can. And so it's inherent to be selfless. And I think a lot of times you play the game without aggression because of that. I think you can get paralysis of analysis. You can get kind of bogged down or worried that, you know, you don't want to be the one letting everybody down. But the reality is you have to dominate. You have to be aggressive. You have to play with attitude. You have to finish. And that allows everybody else to be able to do their job and obviously gives them more time in the run and the pass. So I think he's done a good job of that so far.
BYU for three straight National Football League drafts has put a left tackle into the league, and once again leaving some big shoes to fill. So right now, who is your guy at left tackle on day five of fall camp?
Caleb Etienne, without a doubt. Yep, it's pretty impressive, three in a row. That's pretty cool. So hopefully we can make it four. That's what we're working on.
Hey, I'm all about it. Let's get to four for sure. TJ Woods is with us on BYU Sports Nation. As you assess the group entirely, and you've already answered this in part, but what are they doing best right now, and where do they need to make the most improvement before you take on Southern Illinois on August 31st?
Right now, they're playing with attitude and effort, and without that, nothing else matters. I think they're doing that right now really well. That's part of fall camp, right? The grind, it's hot, it's hard. You know, all of this is by design, right? And they're doing a good job of that. I think the biggest thing going through the rest of fall camp is just gelling together, playing together, building chemistry, building trust. And part of that's my job to get the starting group solidified as fast as we can, right? We're not there yet, but the faster we can do that, the faster those guys can play together. Now, ultimately, on offensive line, it's always 5-on-4 if we all play together. So we should always have the advantage.
What's the desired rotation number? Is 8 the magic number? Is it 10? Is it 12? I know that's kind of a moving target year to year, but what is it for you right now?
I mean, I as a coach, you feel comfortable with 8 to 9, you know? And I think we're in some real battles right now for some of those numbers, you know? There's 6 or 7 that I think are competing for the top 5, but then there's a lot of guys that that are really battling for 7, 8, and 9 right now to get on the bus. And we have a lot of good young players, and I like the competition there right now.
If you had to label a couple of players in the offensive line group as surprises this camp, or people that have really jumped off as you've reviewed film after practice, whatnot, who would those guys be?
Surprises for me, I want to say Caleb Etienne, but I expected him to do well. And he's still got some growth. He's got areas of growth for sure still. But, you know, Sonny Moccasini, I think, is doing really well. You know, Jake Eichhorn's having a good start to camp with the position change. So we got a lot of guys that I think are doing a really good job. But those are just kind of a few off the top of my head.
What's your relationship like with the tight ends group? Because I know that they're very heavily invested in run blocking schemes and working cohesively with the offensive line. So how does that work with Coach Gilbride and the tight ends group? How has that relationship evolved and developed?
Well, I think they're a huge part. I mean, a huge part of our run game, right? And I think that's something that's, I mean, in my career, and I've been a lot of places, but having tight ends that can block and that can set edges in the run game is invaluable. And we have those guys, and we got a lot of them, to be honest. Coach Gilbride does a great job with them. They are clued in. They understand that when they put their hand down next to us, they are the sixth offensive lineman at times, right? And while all those guys are very skilled and can come go catch the ball too, they play with attitude too. They're interested in being physical and knocking people off the ball too. So it's been really fun having those guys with us for sure.
And just for fun at the end here, if you were to push one of your big guys up front because out of necessity to play tight end and catch the ball, who's the guy that you're sliding into that group?
That's tough. I don't know. I would say probably Waylon Lapuaho.
Okay.
Yeah, rugby player, Sonny, one of those guys. They're used to handling the ball. I'm going with them.
I like that. I was just hoping you wouldn't say Connor,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah. Don't tell Connor I said that, you know.
Coach, we appreciate the time and the insight into the offensive line. Look forward to the rest of fall camp. Good luck.
Appreciate it, Spence. Thank you.
TJ Woods, class act. BYU fans understandably love his attitude. Players love that he holds them accountable, very discipline-oriented. And I appreciated his honesty about who he'd give the ball to if he had to, like, slot one of those big guys out there to go catch a ball. He went with the rugby players.
There's also something very reassuring about an offensive line coach with a mustache. I don't know what it is. It lends credibility. It's very manly. It goes with the position. I'm liking it. I'm liking everything I'm seeing from Coach Woods.
I just can't wait to watch BYU in an actual game. Like an actual, just to see. Like, can they do what they couldn't do against Sam Houston State last year?
Right.
Against Southern Illinois.
Yeah, that's one of those, like, normally it's gonna be a victory for BYU, but it's normally you're sort of just like, it's the opening game, but yes. I'm not really excited about the opponent. This can be one because of what happened last year where BYU can come out and really show something different and turn this into something that can get fans excited.
Topic for another day, okay? And I know that our producer, Colton Potter, and I have had this conversation before, but we need to discuss this. Is the first game of the season more of an indicator of how things are going to go for the entire season than we want to give it credit for? Because if you think about the openers for BYU football in the recent past, it's been, and more than you think, it's been quite the indicator for how the season went.
All right, let's hold on to that one because I like that topic. That'd be a good discussion.
All right.
Check out the latest Her Why podcast featuring new BYU swim and dive head coach Tamber McAllister as she talks about her Olympic trials experience back in 2000, her relationship with her mother as her coach, her plans as the new swim and dive coach as well. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts.
Up next, what's the most likely record for BYU football in this season's non-conference schedule? Bill Connelly of ESPN doesn't think it's going to be great. This is BYUSN.
Come on, Bill.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Follow BYU Sports Nation on social media for content throughout the day on Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok.
Welcome back to Studio B. I am Spencer Linton alongside Jason Shepherd, I should say. It's time for our celebrating 100 seasons of BYU football daily trivia question. And I'd venture that over the course of this, Jason, between you and I, and Dave McCann and I, and Blaine Fowler and I, and other combinations of such, we're more than 50%.
I would hope so.
I think we're like 70-ish percent. So let's see if we can't raise that percentage a few points today. Colton, what do you have for us?
Today's question, BYU is undefeated against four FBS opponents with a minimum of three meetings all time. BYU plays two of these four teams this season. Which two teams are they?
Kansas State is one of them. Kansas State is one of them. Who's the other?
The BYU reminder, minimum three meetings.
Also, has Kansas State only played BYU twice?
SMU?
Has BYU played SMU three times? They played in 96, they played in the Miracle Bowl, and they played in the bowl game.
Yeah, so
that's one.
Yeah, so
okay.
SMU.
That's one.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's so.
But have they played, did they not play Kansas State three times?
I'm going to go with, let's go with K-State and let's go with SMU.
Okay.
Against
okay.
four opponents, and they play two of them. Those are the two that they play. So who are the other four FBS?
Are they BYU's not undefeated against Kansas. They lost in the Aloha Bowl in 92.
Yeah.
Certainly not against.
It's not Arizona State, Arizona, Utah. Not against Wyoming.
Oklahoma State, they have never beaten.
Yeah.
So who else could it be? UCF? Nope, they
lost
in 2014.
No. The two, I think we nailed the two that they play this year. So who are the other two?
Oh, who are the other
two? Yeah, because it's they four teams, two of which they play this year.
I don't know who the other two are, but they're undefeated.
Did we at least, Colton, get the two that they play this year correct?
We got one of them correct.
Oh!
It's Houston and SMU.
Houston!
Oh.
4-4 all-time against Kansas State.
All right, well, I at least got my portion right.
So BYU is what?
Other two are Cincinnati, they're 3-0, and New Mexico State.
And New Mexico State.
Okay. Okay.
There you go. Okay, that's like a 50-50, right?
Well, one out of four is not...
No. We were only asked to name the two this season.
Okay, yeah.
He pointed out four. He just,
okay,
he
yeah,
just asked
I like,
for the two.
I like it. Yes, 50%. It's not going to get
us... It's not going to help the percentage.
It's not going to help the 70%.
Right.
Are we going back like Ron, like, you know...
60% of the time works all the time?
Yeah.
Indeed it does.
It's a great math.
Let's get to today's headlines.
All right, the Cougars in Paris update. Yesterday, Whitney Orton Morgan finished 14th in the 5,000-meter finals, running it in 14:53.57, which is a personal best time by nearly 9 seconds. It was her first time breaking 15 minutes in the event. She was awesome.
Amazing.
Kenneth Rooks advanced to the steeplechase finals after taking second in his heat with a time of 8:24.95 and was the lone American to qualify for the final. Rooks will compete in the men's 3,000-meter steeplechase coming up tomorrow at 3:40 Eastern time.
He's got an outside shot to get on the podium. I'm telling you.
Yes. I'm not going to put anything past Kenneth Rooks.
Something to it. He's got that mental toughness,
yes,
man. Current BYU runner James Corrigan also competing in the steeplechase prelims yesterday and finished 10th in his heat. It was the fastest heat of the day. Time of 8 minutes 36 seconds and change, wrapping up his incredible summer where he was Big 12 champ, first team All-American, and of course an Olympic qualifier. Good luck to Courtney Wayman as well, who races today in her steeplechase finals at 3:10 Eastern. Wayman ran the fourth fastest overall time in the prelims. She too has an outside shot to get on the podium.
Very cool. BYU football wrapped up practice number 5 yesterday as we inch closer to the start of the BYU football season. Kalani Sitake was asked how he feels about the quarterback battle 1 week into fall camp and if there's been any separation.
In some ways, it seems like they kind of go back and forth, and so I don't know if it's enough yet to separate them, but it's also difficult when you're working with the one O-line compared to working with the twos. And so we're taking that into account, also with the receivers and the DBs so that are going against them. So when we factor it all in, it's more who can get the team to execute the best. And
BYU returns to practice later on today.
BYU running back LJ Martin named to the Doak Walker Award watch list, which is awarded to the best running back in the country. 5 BYU players were named to the College Football Network All Big 12 preseason teams as well. Tyler Batty on the first team, Jacob Robinson a second teamer, Braden Kimon, Will Farron on the third team, and Jack Kelly an honorable mention.
John Rothstein reported this morning that BYU men's basketball will host Fresno State on December 11th as part of its non-conference schedule. And Rocco Miller reported the other day that BYU men's hoops will host UC Riverside on November 8th. That makes 10 of the 11 non-conference games that have been reported or confirmed so far.
Okay.
So that means Central Arkansas on November 5th should be the season opener. You've got UC Riverside, as we mentioned, on November 8th. Queens on November 13th. Idaho on the 16th of November. Ole Miss, Purdue or NC State.
Those jump up
in
the page.
San Diego around Thanksgiving. You've got at Providence in the Big East, Big 12 battle. Florida A&M on December 20th. And then Wyoming, the date TBD. By the way.
All right. This all tells me that we'll have the official non-conference schedule very soon.
Yes, it should be coming out very soon.
How about this? A little bit of breaking news this morning. Former BYU wide receiver Dax Milne signed just a few minutes ago by the Las Vegas Raiders. The silver and black are back with Dax Milne, who had 15 catches for 120 yards and a touchdown and 40 punt returns for 311 yards in three seasons with the Washington Football Commanders.
Moving to baseball, Daniel Schneeman pinch hit and got an RBI sacrifice fly for the Cleveland Guardians in a 7-6 loss to the Arizona Diamondbacks last night. Also, Houston Astros promoted Austin Deming, calling him up to their AA affiliate, the Corpus Christi Hooks. By the way, one of the best views is from the press box in Corpus Christi.
Oh.
It overlooks the ocean and this gigantic bridge.
Wow.
It's very cool. BYU played down there in a tournament a couple years ago. So I got 3 days of just
nice.
This gorgeous view. It was
outstanding.
Great.
Outstanding. Those are today's headlines. Now some opinions in the whip. Start us off, Jason.
All right. ESPN's Bill Connelly, not going to make BYU fans happy here, released his conference previews with an in-depth breakdown and prediction of each team. In his BYU breakdown, his numbers predict BYU will win 4.3 games this season,
yikes,
2.9 in the Big 12, and how about this, 1.4 in the non-conference. Which of these numbers shocks you the most? Is it the 4.3 overall or the 1.4 non-conference wins?
It's the 1.4 in non-conference because BYU in those three games has Wyoming and Southern Illinois.
Yeah.
In what universe are we living that we don't feel like BYU is for sure going to win two of the first three? But we're here.
Yeah.
We're here. So that, I don't know if it's my... My ego feeling attacked.
Yes, we are going to be defiant here.
Wanting to defend BYU because I know the coaches and the players and I know what they're going through. That one is, whoa. That makes you take a deep breath.
Yeah, that one is shocking to me. And what this tells me is he believes that BYU is going to win the opener against Southern Illinois, and then they're going to lose at SMU and at Laramie.
So
that's what I'm assuming he is. I'm interpreting what he said here.
Bill is awesome, and he knows his formula is not scientific fact, but his formula is pretty good, and we think it's probably the most, collectively speaking, accurate of all of the preseason measures out there. But gosh, I hope he's way wrong.
I hope he's way wrong on this.
I hope his numbers are super wrong. And frankly, I think 1.4 is too low and 4.3 is too low. Like, BYU is going to win at least five games. They're going to win more than that. Like 4.3, 1.4 in non-conference.
That's shocking to me.
Yep. Up next, let's go one-on-one with wide receivers coach Fessy Satake. Guarantee he doesn't think BYU is going to go 1.4 wins in non-conference. We'll discuss the depth of the wide receiver room, his unique perspective on the quarterback battle, and more. This is BYU Sports Nation. Welcome back to Studio B. This is BYU Sports Nation, live for all to see. And time now for our second interview of the day. As we go back to BYU football practice, yesterday I spoke one-on-one with BYU receivers coach Fessy Satake about the depth of his room. Is it the deepest on the team? And what does he think of this quarterback battle and how it's impacting the entirety of BYU football? One-on-one with Fessy Satake.
Coach, we're officially into week two, fall camp, and now you've had five full practices. You're in the full pads for the first time. So how was today different than the first few days based on not just pads but the atmosphere overall?
First, as obvious, is just more physical. You know, guys are starting to – they want to get acclimated to hitting. and been a lot of talking, good healthy banter back and forth, and so to be able to put some pads to it, it was increased energy. Defense had a great day today. They got the best of us, but good opportunity for us to come back tomorrow and get them. But love it. Great competition. It's good to see the guys flying around in pads.
Why do you say the defense won the day specifically?
They had more stops. You know, we had some turnovers, and they made more plays than us today.
How would you assess the overall offensive performance thus far in terms of what you've done best and where maybe your biggest question mark still remains?
I think it varies by position group, but in general, you can see the increased chemistry. You know, last year, I don't think we had a shortage of good players. We just, you know, when you dip in the portal, that's the trade-off. You got talented guys who are still latching onto some of those nuances that we've been spoiled by, honestly, in our time here. And so to be able to see a lot of these guys latch onto the playbook, you know, tighten up on some of those little details that they weren't able to last year, I think that's been the biggest, clear sign this fall in our improvement. So I've been really happy to see, is like in my group specifically, some of those guys who were newer last year just take a big jump.
Let's talk about your specific group. A lot of people think that the wide receiver group's the deepest on the team. And to your point, you bring back a lot of guys. What has the core done maybe to solidify the argument that the receivers group is the deepest on the team?
I'll stay away from that argument. I can just answer what they've done is everything I just talked about in terms of there's so many parts of our playbook. Each concept brings a wide range of variables that you have to be ready for, and you have to adjust to live time. The processing speed has to increase. How's my route going to change? How is my technique going to change in this specific route? All those little things, where should my split be? How does it change according to where we're at on the field? You know, all those things are critical in operating fast, and those guys, that's what I feel they've done. Some of the things I was harping on heavy last year, getting frustrated, a source of frustration, they don't really exist right now. So obviously there's still room to improve, and we gotta get better, but I love the jump that they've taken, and in terms of making the case for the they can talk about the deepest group. You know, I don't know if that's the reason. I just know that that's what they've gotten better at.
Who are your leaders in the wide receiver room right now?
Man, that's a good question. And I'm happily, you know, I'll happily say that every guy brings his own sense of leadership. I think naturally the older, the veteran guys, Darius Lasseter, who's my true senior, Chase Roberts and Cody Epps, they, you know, have great leadership qualities to them. They've been the most vocal. Guys lean on those guys and their playmaking ability. But then that next wave of guys in Keelan, JoJo, and Parker, who are a little bit more youthful in the offense, like they have great energy, man. And JoJo doesn't say a word, but he leads in the way he makes plays. Keelan's got a lot of energy and juice. Parker's been making a ton of plays. So I just love that each one of them have a feeling that to be a leader, you don't have to be the oldest guy in the room. And you can lead in many different ways, and I've been happy with that.
Aaron Roderick and some other offensive players have said, and we're installing a lot of material right now. And naturally, when you throw in a bunch of new stuff, sometimes that can be difficult for an offense to adjust to. So how much of maybe some offensive struggles and frustrations in these last few days is because of the install?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to quantify that, but there's a good portion. Like, you can see some of the pre-snap, you know, procedures that we're having, some of the guys who are not playing full speed. I would say that that's the reason. You know, when we have turnovers, you know, guys are, you know, we're missing assignments. But I think in general, as we scale it back, we'll start to clean things up a lot more. We knew as a staff that there's going to, you know, throwing the offense at them is going to come with some hard plays, some mistakes. It's hard to, we say that, but then you come on the field and emotions are high, right? Yeah. Get frustrated. And so it's a good opportunity and learning experience for us as coaches to say, hey, we know what we're up against. Let's you know, keep our emotions cool. And I think we've done a good job of that. But I'm excited to, I think I would say about, you know, 90% of the offense is in. And so there's a couple of special stuff we need to install. But as we start to scale back, get more specific versus our defense or a future opponent, I think we'll execute cleaner.
Vessi Satake is with us on BYU Sports Nation after practice number 5. How has the quarterback battle specifically impacted this camp and maybe made it unique compared to camps you've been in previous years?
Yeah, I think it's just made everyone focus on their job. You know, like, you know, I know, you know, the narrative out there, it's the guys get it. They're like, there's this battle. There's, you know, some people see it as a controversy. The message for all the other position groups is like, who cares? Like, that's going to work itself out. You got to become accustomed to, you know, understanding the cadence and the tempo of each quarterback, how they throw, their skill sets, and it forces these guys to really look at the more important things as opposed to the end and who's going to win that job. And I, so I think, you know, we as coaches got to do a continually do a great job at framing how we can actually become better through this competition as opposed to getting caught up in a lot of the hype.
Your close colleague and offensive coordinator Aaron Roderick has said he's in no rush to name a starter, but I'm sure there is a timeline. So what can you tell us about the desired timeline? If you had to like circle a date or a week where it was in the best interest of your offense, your staff, and your team to have a quarterback, when would that be?
I would go to A-Rod and say, hey, I'd give him a calendar and say, circle the date so I can tell Spencer when that is. So I don't know. I don't get paid for that decision or circling that date.
I think I saw August 15th right there on my imaginary my imaginary calendar.
We'll say that.
Okay, well played. That's a veteran answer on your part for sure. I have to ask it though for sure. Okay, as you push forward at this point, again, I know we're only 5 days in, but what's your biggest question mark about the offense in general?
I think one thing we haven't been tested with right now, like we're throwing in the playbook, we're working on a lot of different situations, we've got to sustain drives. And so we haven't been able to go against our defense and just see how we can march down the field and do that over and over and over. So that's the biggest question. Obviously, I'm optimistic that we're going to be able to do that when the time comes. And so, but naturally, that's my biggest question right now.
Okay, some quick hitters to finish. What's the best thing that Gary Bohannon has brought to this team?
Toughness and great leadership.
And the same question for Jake Retzlaff.
Savviness, swagger, and humor.
Okay, I like that. And then in the wide receiver room, who has surprised you?
I hate naming one name, but I know you're gonna. I don't want to leave you hanging. I'll say JoJo Phillips. He's not a surprise. He's not a surprise in that way, but I'll just say he's kind of had the most consistent camp relative to where he was last year.
I love that. And for what it's worth, I've heard his name and Prince Zombo from a bunch of the guys. So, hey, you're on par with what the other guys are saying. Fess, you appreciate the time. Know how busy you are. Best of luck to you the rest of fall camp. And, again, I'll go look at my imaginary calendar and imagine when that quarterback's going to be named.
I'll text you that circle date.
Thanks, Fessy.
Yep, thank you.
He's not texting me anything. You should have showed up with your Franklin Day Planner.
Just circle it for me.
Yeah. I won't tell anybody.
If you miss any of our fall camp interviews or coverage, you can always find them on demand on BYUSN.com or on BYU Sports Nation's YouTube channel.
After the break, this week's Top 5 Tuesday features the top 5 plays from BYU football fall camp thus far. This is BYUSN.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Focusing on the top 5 BYU football plays from the 2024 fall camp and the first 5 days of fall camp. We've had limited exposure here, so we're doing the best with what we have. Chase, start us off at number 5.
Number 5, Keelan Marion with this catch during one-on-one.
Okay, Keelan.
That. Yeah, Retzlaff throwing it up to Marion, makes the tough catch, and then lets everybody know that he's back. The catch pops back up. Yep, he's back.
I'm feeling 17. Number 4, Keanu Hill. In his new position as a tight end, the Moss. Oh, it's a great catch, and that's on a good defensive back in Tanner Wall as well, who's had a fantastic camp. Tanner Wall later in the rundown.
All right, number 3, Tanner Wall with the pick 6. Everybody but the offense loves a pick 6. One of the 6 returning safeties who started a game for BYU jumps the route for a fall camp pick 6, and his teammates love it.
He's graded out near perfect in every practice. He's having a fantastic camp. Number 2, McKay Hillstead. He's down the depth chart in the quarterback room, but look at this gorgeous. That might move you up a spot or two. Long ball to Ty West, Utah State quarterback transfer, on a dime to his receiver, Ty West.
And number 1, Gary Bohannon, the deep ball to Darius Lassiter. Oh, look at that pretty ball.
Oh, that's and in the triple catch. Coverage.
3 defenders in the area, makes the catch. Beautiful throw and catch for the BYU offense.
I want to question the throw because it's in the triple coverage, but then I look at who the guy is that he's throwing to, Darius Lassiter, and it's like, I get it.
It's one of those, no, yes.
He's open down there somewhere, right? It's Darius Lassiter. Our question of the day, which of the five Big 12 teams in the preseason coaches top 25 poll is BYU most likely to upset this season? Our Elite Voice today presented by PAX Healthcare Elevated. Dr. T, PhD on X says Utah for sure. There's so much emotion in that game that our guys always have a chance. Goku's, wow. Today's Rise and Shout Out presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics.
How about we give it to the parents and the families of all of the BYU Olympians?
So cool to watch the Rooks family
cool.
Hug as they're 10 qualified.
Yep.
Our thanks to today's guest. Conversation continues 24/7 on social media. For Jason, I'm Spencer. See you tomorrow. Go Cougs!
Go Cougs!